Good afternoon. I'm very pleased to be here. I'd like to thank ELI and BSIMS for hosting this meeting. It's not easy to be early on an issue like this, and it's wonderful that you're doing this. And secondly, thank you for allowing me to participate. I really appreciate it. This afternoon, I'll cover basically a few things quickly. One, just some very brief background about the Meridian Institute, only because it may help color or help you see why I'm going to say what I'm going to say today. Quickly go through that. Secondly, I want to talk about why did we launch and why are donors supporting the Global Dialogue on Nanotechnology and the Poor, Opportunities and Risks. And then third, of course, something about the dialogue very briefly. And lastly, just a few thoughts I might share from me and my colleagues about governance issues, particularly with that skew in mind. All right, what am I hitting here? The right? Okay. So very quickly, the organization I work for, Meridian, nonprofit organization, 30 of us split between Colorado and Washington, D.C. Actually, I'm here in Colorado recently. It's a delightful town if this is your first time visiting. Basically, we provide neutral facilitation, conflict management on issues that are typically very complex and very controversial simultaneously, and people that are trying to make a decision are wrapped around the axle a little bit. We do this both domestically and globally. No surprise to you, the kind of issues then we've been involved with over the last many years have to do with things around environment, science and technology, like biotechnology applications, like the safe destruction of chemical nuclear weapons, natural resource management, food security issues, security itself, and health issues. As you can imagine, then, we're the guys in the middle, the ones working in between governments, or between government, the private sector, research, scientific community, NGOs, and others. Keep kicking this in. Briefly, we've had about 3.5 years of history working in nanotechnology, and so that does skew a little bit what bringing about Nano and the Poor, and also maybe just generally to this conference. I'll point out items 1 and 7 we've done in collaboration with the Woodrow Wilson Center over the years with great pride. Item 3, you heard the previous speaker reference the second meeting coming up in June in Japan. This first meeting, I would urge you to take a look if you have a chance at this website, simply because this is a meeting of 29 governments and the heads of the national initiatives in those governments in a very forthright conversation with each other to take a look at what are you doing and what are we doing. And what's interesting about this, the reason I point you to this, is they filled out a survey form to talk about what are the priorities, are you regulating, if so, under what authorities, if your concerns do you have, and remarkably to us, the governments agreed to make that publicly available, and if there's a wealth of information there, it may be a little out of date, but I suspect it's probably close to still accurate. Item 5, U.S. FACA committee, Federal Advisory Committee, that dealt with nanotech as well. Moving on, so how did we get into this? I guess from our perspective and those that are supporting the dialogue, it was the confluence, a couple of dynamics worldwide that really caught our attention. One, this is an amazing area of science with enormous potential, cutting across almost all industrial sectors in society, whether it's medicine or agriculture, environmental applications, material science, communications, and on, and clearly some amazing breakthrough possibilities. Two, the amount of resources being expended worldwide, both by governments and by the private sector, is very significant and substantial, with commitments over the long term. In that regard, I'll just point to you some of the very recent data that's just come out. If you take a look at this, you've got about $9.6 billion being spent, up 10% from 2004 worldwide. Governments, $4.5 to $5 billion approximately. The United States, I believe about $1 billion is probably a close number. Maybe it's a little less these days. And in the private sector as well, you could see in the second one down, up 18%. We're seeing continued growth in that because of the enormous potential of the technology. Lots of venture capital. I would just note, tons of patents. It's really moving very fast, and conversations we have with the European Patent Office and in the United States and elsewhere, people feel like they have a pretty good handle now, but as we get more and more convergence, it's going to get complicated for the patent lawyers for sure. I think the important thing about this slide in my mind is to point out, as you look at not only the financial allocations, because that may not give you the full picture, nanotechnology is enjoying real robust participation by developing countries, both strong developing countries one would think of, South Africa, Brazil, China, India, etc., but also much smaller developing countries across the planet, many taking a niche approach. So Korea, for example, with an orientation towards medical devices, and countries around the world really trying to sort out what their place might be in this. It's the other part that really struck us and some of the supporters of the dialogue as we were looking at this is that fundamentally, if you looked at where nanotechnology has tremendous potential, what are the applications of nanoscience really, and what are very well documented, almost to a fault, right, human development needs for which the world is continuing to strive to make some progress, the lineup is amazing, especially if you look in the short term. The well-documented needs through the UN Millennium Development Goals probably would be the most recent, the most visible, the most kind of politically visible, but you know, tons of annual reports from the World Bank, UNDP, and others. And you know this list, even if you're not an expert. Water, energy, especially sustainable energy in the developing world, whether it's to protect seed, whether it's to hold medical applications, agriculture potential. Line up very, very nicely with where nanotechnology is heading. At the same time, you'll notice in the title for our dialogue is Nanotechnology and the Poor, Opportunities and Risks. Given our long history, kind of picking up the pieces, whether it's Superfund, biotechnology after the fact, right, is that probably dealing with both simultaneously made sense. And again, with our eye on things, we started to think about what caught our attention, given real-time things we're working on right now. Well, public health effects for researchers, graduate students, workers, obviously natural environmental things, especially I think this crowd will be familiar with, but also socioeconomic issues, particularly if you think about developing countries, potential displacement of economies. So the wonderful possible applications in the commodity area, let's say minerals, might bring strength, low use, potentially some sustainable development, if you will, applications, and yet might totally displace the Bolivian economy if applied without adequate preparation. Control, in our minds, has had a lot to do with intellectual property rights, not as much of do governments get to make the decisions as the private sector. In reality, our organization especially and our predecessor, the Keystone Center, where we all worked, is that I can't tell you how much time we've spent on intellectual property rights issues north-south, developed and developing countries. And the opportunity to think ahead of time, if you think about $1 billion U.S. being invested annually, a lot of it going to American universities, we had to cut a deal between 30 universities and African governments about how can you get access for humanitarian purposes. Wouldn't it be nice to do that upstream and figure out how to manage the IP in a way that allows universities to reap all the benefits they should enjoy, and companies, and still provide some reasonable access for humanitarian purposes. Ethical questions, as well as the governance one we're here to talk about. So, hence, the thought, why not start some discussion and make this visible now, sooner than later? The agenda really is to make this a legitimate and bona fide topic worldwide. And for us, we're dialogue here. Some of the people I see in this room we've worked with where you've sat in some of the Keystone or Meridian dialogues where it meant 60 people banging heads, Hill staff, environmental groups, and others trying to reach consensus on a regulation, on a law or a treaty. And this, think about dialogue in this case as a global sharing of information back and forth, kind of a global technology assessment almost. Right, not one singular process. Think of it as lots of things that would contribute to sharing information, getting points of view heard, some of it face-to-face, some of it people hearing information. Okay, So the dialogue that we launched initially with funding from the Rockefeller Foundation and now with the British government support as well as the Canadian government support is meant to do a few things. really make explicit and put on the global table for discussion what's the connection, what should be the connection between nanotechnology that evolves and the development needs, especially of poor people. Two, to try and ensure that the implications, both for and against, goods and bad, for the poor are addressed early on, are part of bona fide conversations that are taking place and not an afterthought. We launched this with several goals. Pretty simple. Just raise awareness. Just talking about it will be helpful, and it has already. And talking about it on the internet, talking about it in public policy circles, at UN meetings, with companies, been very useful. Two, close the gaps between sectors of society. This is code word for don't just get each sector thinking about it. Can you get them thinking about it together? And especially a big challenge, I think, to the science community. Not used to people going that far upstream, kind of the multi-stakeholder thing that an US EPA might be very familiar, reasonably comfortable with, right? Is that the scientific community gets a little nervous about people asking questions about what are you working on, why are you doing this, where is this heading, how will you patent it? And then starting early might be good. And then finally, this third thing is, what are the ways science and tech can play an appropriate role, and I underscore the word appropriate role, in the development process? I don't mean human enhancement. I mean poor people being less poor. In this regard, nanotechnology is the latest, and one might assume would be a long litany of list of future science and technology applications. And many in the world are starting to think about. So if we think more and better about development in the developing world, what is an appropriate role for science and tech? And nanotechnology presents an opportunity right now to have that kind of conversation and maybe some lessons learned generically. So, what is this thing about? In very quick overview. A lot having to do with information. So, we commissioned a paper that was posted on the internet last year, invited about 500 people to participate in some online consultation as well as the general public that tried to surface the issues as we knew and understood them. Third, part of what informed that was probably 2,000-3,000 consultations worldwide. Scientists, researchers, regulators, ministers, NGOs, local NGOs, international NGOs, try and get a handle on how are people approaching nanotechnology, not approaching it, what are they thinking about, what are they not. We have been participating, doing some papers, talking at some conferences and workshops worldwide, everything from the World Bank's Consultative Group on International Agricultural Research in Mexico City, the premier research institutions in the world doing research on food crops that poor people eat around the world, trying to get them to start thinking about, so is there a role for nanotechnology? Again, opportunities, risks, as well as some of the UN meetings, the Swiss Re meeting, Foresight, Canadian Prime Minister's Science Advisor convened a meeting of government scientists to talk about this. And to launch something called Nanotechnology and Development News, I brought some copies if you wish so you could see what it is. The British government, because they've been supportive of a similar listserv that goes out every day worldwide on biotech and international development, goes to policymakers, scientists, NGOs. What's the latest? It's basically three things every day. Here's what you need to know today. A new company was formed. This NGO just took this position. Here's the peer-reviewed science. Here's the gray science. Quick and easy. And a paper on water that is just being completed this week that is being co-authored by Timbeli Hille, who is chair of CSIR in South Africa, one of the lead agencies moving out on nano in South Africa, and Mohan Mushinge, who's the co-chair of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. That paper is trying to take an area where there is potential, water, and think through what do we know now, what technologies are on the ground, and we're convening a workshop, and I'll end soon here. So multi-stakeholder discussions. We've had a steering committee at the Royal Society worldwide of some of the leaders around the world to help guide the initial formation of the dialogue. The water meeting will be held in India. The paper we will surface globally soon that tries to be clear what are the opportunities, what are some of the challenges, what do we know about where there's applications with water, and get some of those people in the same room as well as the donors. There will be a workshop on commodities addressing the issue I just discussed. We are forming, and we'll announce in 2 weeks, a critical connections group. That's a kind of spin-off of the steering committee. leaders of the major global initiatives so they can have access to each other and we can have access to their brains and guidance. And then we will be doing some dialogues, as some of you know them, the 40 person in the room, what are you going to do about this? Let's settle it, on intellectual property and on governance, we suspect. We have been working in linkages at the local level as well. We're helping Terry in India as they are convening some multi-stakeholder meetings there and then something in the Andean region. I guess lastly, just a few thoughts to offer up in terms of governance in developing countries. Probably as good as Liz, and you'll have a better one, I'm sure. One, as we think about governance, we think about broadly more than just kind of regulations, right? Think about how do those that are making decisions interact. So first, more systematic ways of identifying how nanotech can help meet human development needs. What's the role, for example, in USAID and the State Department in putting a call on the $1 billion U.S., as one example? Two, making sure the risk assessment capacity is there. Our own work in biotechnology indicates that could be a real challenge in some parts of the world. Trying to start thinking about that early in the game is prudent for everybody, public sector, private sector, NGOs. Risk management policies, of course, pretty critical. And I said, say to you on this third point, is it dawned on us is that with higher tech outsourcing, think about where prudent worldwide companies might allocate some of their science research in the developing world and what kind of exposures might be there that would be of a kind of occupational safety and health kind of need. My last slide is this is a little oblique to the way we normally think about things. This is not a north-south issue. This is a global issue. There are players worldwide playing in this. All right, everyone is investing significant resources. How does one engage that? We're not used to that. All right, NGOs aren't typically used to having to really negotiate with the Chinese government. That's tough. They're going to be a big player in this issue, for example. Thinking about governance that has more broad participation, pretty extreme. Let me conclude and just say thanks. Please tap into the resources we've got available to us. Really appreciate it. Thank you for the time, for allowing this to be on the agenda.